Good evening, everybody. It is 7 p.m. and I would like to call the November 9th, 2020 general meeting to order. Madam Treasurer, can we get a roll call, please?
Councilmember Clark?
Present.
Councilmember Van der Zanden?
Here.
Mayor Cannamore?
Here.
Councilmember Taylor?
Here.
Councilmember Owens?
Here.
Councilmember Lewis?
Here.
And Councilmember Buckeye?
Here.
There are seven present and a quorum exists.
Okay. Councilmember Lewis, would you read our vision statement, please?
Sure. We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources, with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decision-making affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, and in which people retain a closeness with and caring for each other individually and collectively while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions.
Thank you very much. Joe, could you like mute yours while I'm talking or something? Sorry, everybody, we're figuring out some technical difficulties. Okay. Okay. Next, I would like to read a letter of recognition for our nurse practitioner, Lisa LaGrange. It says, Dear Lisa, Gustavus has been very fortunate to have you as our nurse practitioner and medical care provider in the Gustavus Community Clinic for the past 2.5 years. Your and caring attitude, the time you devote to each patient, and the clarity of your information and communication are sincerely appreciated. Your extra efforts during the current COVID-19 pandemic have added significantly to our community members' health and feelings of security. Dr. Rod Vaught points to your excellent organizational skills, which have significantly improved the clinic's operations and the refreshing nature of your humility. The important and dedicated work of your staff member, Kelly Warren, is also widely appreciated, as is her extremely, extremely polite and helpful manner. The assistance of Michelle Shatswell and the volunteers who help the staff the coronavirus drive-by testing station and at the school have made major contributions to the health and safety of the Gustavus community. We realize that it's not easy to find as dedicated and capable a care provider as yourself. We sincerely thank you for your work, and we hope you will remain a member of our community in the years to come. You are truly highly valued by our community. With our deepest appreciation, Gustavus City Council members. So many thanks to Lisa and everybody that staffs the clinic. We really appreciate all of your hard work. Before getting started, I would like to ask the public to mute your phones and keep your video off so we can ensure that things run smoothly. I'd also like to remind you that the meeting is being recorded and it will be posted to our website. Phoebe, our treasurer, is sharing her screen and that's projecting the packet. You can also find it available online at cms.gustavus-ak.gov. If you would like to speak during public comment, please click the participation button at the bottom of your screen and click the raised hand. Moving on to item number 3, approval of minutes. Here we will approve special meeting minutes from 10-12-2020 and the general meeting minutes from 10-12-2020, and I will entertain a motion. Is there a council member that would like to move to approve these minutes?
Madam Mayor, I make a motion to approve minutes as submitted.
Second that.
Second by Taylor.
Okay, it's been moved to approve by unanimous consent the special meeting minutes by Councilmember Buckeye and seconded by Councilmember Clark. These minutes have been previously distributed. Do any of the members of the public wish to offer any additions or corrections to the minutes? Susan Werner, go ahead.
Sorry, I was raising my hand to give public testimony.
Okay. Are there any members of the public that would like to make additions or corrections to the minutes from the general meeting and special meeting on the 20th or the 12th of October? Okay, seeing none, are there any council members that would like to make additions or corrections to the minutes? Okay, are there any objections to passing the special meeting minutes from 10-12-2020 and the general meeting minutes from 10-12-2020 by unanimous consent? Hearing none, the motion is passed by unanimous consent. Moving on to item four, mayor's request for agenda changes. I do not have any requests or suggestions to change the agenda. Is there any council comment? Are there any objections to adopting the agenda by unanimous consent? Hearing none, I'm going to set the agenda by unanimous consent. Moving on to item five, committee and staff reports. We'll go ahead and start with those. Travis, did you want to give an update?
Madam Mayor, the Travis may be on an emergency call right now.
Okay, over. Thank you, Mike. Okay, we'll go ahead and move on to the GVA, the Gustavus Visitor Association quarterly report. Is there anybody from the GVA that would like to give a report for this quarter? Okay, I don't see anybody here for the GVA. Hopefully all the council members got a chance to look over that in the general meeting packet. We'll go ahead and move on to the DRC's quarterly report. Paul, are you on this call?
Can you hear me? Perhaps I am.
Great, yes, thank you.
Hear me or not. Is the volume good and everything? Because I know the other day it was all potted down, so. Thank you.
Yep, you sound good to me. Thanks.
Okay, yeah, I'll be brief. My quarterly report is kind of based on what I've put in the report that's on the screen there that Karen or Phoebe has brought up. And I've also put it up online on the DRC's webpage. So I encourage the council members and anybody in the public who's interested in what is going on currently with the DRC to read the report. There's a lot of information and a lot of things going on. So I'm just briefly going to kind of say what's new since I've posted the report. The DRC labor pool is a annual kind of a temporary pool, and that's coming up again for 2021. I've posted it at the post office and other locations around town. So I'm hoping to have interested individuals who would like to work in the pool next year apply with the city for membership in the pool. And there's a lot more information online and in the position description and stuff like that, but that's coming up. And then I also did go into the COVID-19 impacts for people who are curious as far as the impacts in terms of the waste stream, the flow of waste into the facility, as far as it's how that has shown up. And so that's got a kind of a percentage deal there as far as how much is that. But you know, it's as I go in that there's some advantages to it in that our waste amount is growing that much slower as far as not having all of the waste from the lodge and some of the other seasonal things going into the waste mound. So there has been the growth of our waste mound has been slowed down, as well as how much recyclables we're shipping have definitely been impacted, where I've only had one shipment so far this fiscal year instead of about three. So there's definitely impact from that. The community chest has been really wonderful. I really am grateful to Vicki Bender and Annie Makoviak for being the crew bosses and kind of getting that going again. It's really their efforts to kind of make things happen. I try to just support them, make sure the building, you know, has its electricity and the doors closed and floors painted and stuff like that. But it's really people like Vicki and Annie who are marshaling all the volunteers for front desk sales and for sorting. And it's been really positive, and I'm really grateful for that. It's really been nice to have the chest come back and be a vibrant happening thing for the community and for the recycling center. I'm really grateful for that. And I do mention the solid waste management plan, which is kind of a long-term planning process. One of the things that's happened recently with that is CSWA, the Southeast Alaska Solid Waste Authority, has actually met again. It's almost been a year hiatus because of changes in leadership in this regional body. Gustavus is not a member of CSWA, but it's something to think about in terms of a long-term strategy for shipping out solid waste or shipping out recyclables. I mean, it's always to my best interest to listen in on the regular meetings of CSWA, just to know what's going on in like Sitka or Petersburg or Craig. I mean, it's really, I've learned a lot from this group of people. And this is something I will be talking with the council as the season progresses. If, you know, if there's interest in Gustavus joining CSWA for, you know, waste management purposes, but that's something that could come into the future. And in capital project summaries, yeah, you guys see the fence going up at the inflow storage area at the DRC. We're actually, you know, I've got the slatted fence up there and people can't see everything in there. It's kind of novel. I mean, I think we got an uptick in how many refrigerators and white goods we got. And I think part of that over the course of the summer. And I think part of that is because people could see that we're storing. It's like, hey, I didn't know they took those. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, maybe we should have a more visibility for all of these things in there. But anyway, that's the first project going and that I've mentioned on there. The compost facility, that project hasn't really moved forward over the course of the summer, but I'm hoping with this winter to actually get that going again so that by the time the construction season comes about in April, that there'll be something put forward, because the city has funds available to replace the Quonset and do some improvements in the composting yard. So it's my job to come up with a RFQ, a proposal, you know, that local businesses can bid on for improving the services. So that's kind of a wintertime project to get that. Try once again. This will be the third attempt to get something going on that. The hazardous waste facility that's purchasing a van now that the inflow storage area is complete and there's a place to put it. I'm putting an effort into actually finishing the specifying for the waste container. You've got to find three different vendors, come up with a competitive price, figure out the shipping, and make sure that the money that is available will cover these things. But that's a good wintertime project as far as planning and shopping. I put new building on the report, just that's not a capital project per se for that's been funded, but I'm hoping to use this winter to work with an architect using kind of planning monies that exist in our contractual services budget to work with an architect or at least find an architect. It's not like we have much money to actually work with one to look into the layout of the new building, the layout of traffic flow and stuff like that, because I really want to speak with a professional who has, you know, designed transfer stations and has some background in a waste building, like a transfer station building, in the layout of our new building. And that's kind of important to me because I want to see us make the right moves when it comes to doing the layout and stuff. And then finally on the end of the report, it's the running water. And just on Friday, John Nixon did the electrical work for this. So when my brother returns from the warm climes of White Sulphur, I'm hoping to work with him and setting up the plumbing for it, hooking up the hot water tank, and so the DRC can actually have year-round running water in the changing room so that people can wash their hands for proper sanitation and for, you know, making sure that we've got a way of keeping clean as part of our activity. And that's, I'm glad to see that project actually going forward. And that's thanks to funding with the CARES Act and kind of keeping these projects going forward. So that in a nutshell is my report. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Paul. Are there any council questions for Paul on the DRC report? Okay, doesn't look like it. Thank you again, Paul, for all your hard work.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Phoebe, would you like to give a report?
Thank you, Mayor. This is my month for a quarterly report, and so I just have a few notes here. I included in the packet again this month the FY20 fiscal year 20 profit and loss. We're close to finalizing that, and I'll be bringing that forward for our annual certified financial statement at a meeting coming soon. And we did end with a budget surplus that we'll be able to carry over to assist with this year's budget as prior year cash balance funds. I've got a couple notes in here about the non-code ordinances we'll be going over later. So I won't discuss those now. For CARES Act relief funds, we requested our second payment last week. And once that hits the bank, I'll be writing the checks for the City of Gustavus Resident Emergency Economic Stimulus Program. It looks like we're gonna have maybe 388 final approved applicants. That's not totally final yet, but it's looking that way, which would be about $515 per qualified applicant, 515. So again, once that deposit gets into our bank, the checks will be printed and going out, I'm hoping here in the next week or so, but I do not have a date yet. Our COVID-19 greeting screening services that we've been contracted for through the state of Alaska are been extended through the end of the year. And as I'm sure you've seen around town, those services have shifted to occur at the fire hall at the posted times because of damage to the tent down at the airport. So that's still available. The endowment fund grant program is still underway. We have one grantee still working on their grant from this past year, the current year, and applications have been received for the next grant cycle. We have a city council working group that'll meet with the applicants coming up, and then that'll be discussed at the work session and hopefully grants awarded in December, the December work session, the December general meeting. And then as far as capital projects, we're working on the purchase of the fire department's replacement AED monitor, and everything else is just still kind of on hold at this point. And that's all I have, unless people have questions about the financial reports. I'll flip through them here for a moment.
Thank you, Phoebe. Are there any council comments or questions for Phoebe? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the city administrator report. Go ahead, Tom, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mayor. The first item I wanted to report on is the movement of our steel float. Ben Sadler, our Marine Facilities Coordinator, is online. Ben, would you like to give a summary of the operation?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
So on Tuesday, we moved the two remaining skiff floats into the harbor. On Wednesday, that was me and Elm and Joe VanderZanden. On Wednesday, Don Bryant and Joe VanderZanden and I used two 3-ton chain hoists that the city purchased for this purpose to raise the ramp down to the float and secure it for the winter. And then on Friday, Toshua Parker, Zach Linning, and Jordy, I'm not sure Jordy's last name, along with myself and Joe VanderZanden, were able to successfully move the steel float with ease over to Bull Moose Cove. We did have a slight problem. The second collar tie from the dock broke when we opened it up. But I contacted David Lowell and DOT and Chris Hart this morning, and they were pretty confident that it was something that the state would pay to fix through federal money, and they were going to get back to me on that. But other than that, those are the people that helped. Mike Halbert was also a big help in getting some ropes ready for us, and all went relatively smoothly for doing it this late in the season. That's all I have, unless anybody has any questions.
Okay, thanks, Ben. In addition to Phoebe's update on the CARES Act, there's an update on a couple of CARES Act projects that we're working on. The food assistance program, that's a CARES Act project that Susan Warner and Kimber Owen took the reins of and has been working on providing frozen halibut and canned salmon. They did a distribution on Saturday, November 7th. They have about 450 pounds, of which 50 pounds was donated by the church, and about 300 cans of salmon. Therefore, they're going to do an additional distribution Saturday the 14th. I think I misspoke. Let me back that up. They distributed 450 pounds of halibut, and an extra 50 pounds was donated by the church. They also distributed 300 cans of salmon, distributed to about 93 folks, including family members. They have about 140 pounds of halibut and about 150 cans of salmon left over. So they're going to have another distribution on the 14th at the small boat harbor. It's going to be at noon till 1 on a first come, first served basis. I want to thank Kimber and Susan for, and all of those involved, for getting this much needed food out to those who need it. The food assistance program is utilizing the food sealer and grinder to process the halibut, though that equipment was purchased through the CARES Act funding. Also, a big thank you to James Proctor and his crew for getting all that halibut to us. We also have a new project that got noticed today. That's a web design project that Leah Okin and GVA, as well as Susan Warner, has been working on. This is a November-only local business website development project with a strategy to address the COVID-19 pandemic impacts. The idea is to have an internet marketing assistance for small business and nonprofits. We've set aside $20,000 to fund the selected local businesses, up to $1,200 to be used to hire a professional web developer or internet marketing company for assistance with establishing, enhancing, updating, or refining the business websites to specifically market those services to target the independent travelers. Working with the Cedar Group, a marketing firm out of Juneau, they identified five categories: the new and returning independent traveler, artist independent traveler, families traveling independently, independent adventure travelers, and the science and eco-oriented travelers. Although the goal of the program is to increase visitation and duration of stays, any local business or nonprofit that can help to make Gustavus a more attractive destination to independent travelers is welcome to apply for this internet marketing assistance. So thanks to Lee and Susan for putting that project together, and hopefully that'll help with the upcoming visitor season. The last item I had was the What's Up project that was presented at the November 2nd work session, where staff provided a brief description of their department, and there was an opportunity for council members to ask questions and have discussions with the department heads. Thanks to the department heads and the council members, that was a good opportunity for us to introduce our departments. That's all I have, Mayor, unless there's some questions.
Thank you, Tom and Ben as well. Are there any council questions for Tom? Okay, doesn't look like it. Thanks again, Tom. Okay, moving on to item 6. This is public comment on non-agenda items. This comment period is for non-agenda items only and is not intended for discussion, but the council may ask clarifying questions. And tonight we have two presentations that I'd like to do first, and then we'll open it up to the public. And the first presentation is from the State of Alaska COVID-19 Community Engagement Team.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Can you hear me?
Yep, thank you.
Hi, thanks, Madam Mayor, and thanks to the council. My name is Brian Fisher. I am one of the incident commanders for the state's COVID-19 Unified Command. I wanted to thank you for giving us a few minutes tonight to talk to you and the members of the community about the response to the pandemic and what's been going on. Unfortunately, Commissioner Crum was going to join us. He just got called away literally a few minutes ago to some other meetings. So he sends his apologies that he won't be able to be on. But in addition to myself, I have Paul Nelson is on the Zoom. Paul is the director of my agency, which is the State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. And we have Eliza Muse from the Department of Health and Social Services as well. So I think first and foremost, I'd like to commend all of you for all of the work that you've done since the beginning of this pandemic. You really have been a great community to work with. A lot of kudos to Mr. Williams and the city staff, and then of course Chief Miller, known the chief for quite a while, and he has been very instrumental and great to work with. So has Tom and everybody else as we went through into the summer and started up the whole travel testing program and all that. Most of you are, I'm sure, are aware that last Friday, Governor Dunleavy issued a new disaster declaration that will replace the one that's currently in effect. The new public health disaster emergency will go into effect on November 16th. So in essence, what that means at its most basic is that the mandates that we have in place will remain. We may do some renumbering and some formatting of those, but the mandates, including Health Mandate 10, which is the one that helped us put the testing site in place in Gustavus, will remain in effect. The Health Mandate 18, the intrastate travel mandate will remain in place, and the other three that are still out there, there's one for fishing, one for healthcare services, and one for non-congregate sheltering. So they'll all remain in place. We're continuing to work with the administration and the legislature on steps forward come December 15th. The governor's declarations are valid for a period of 30 days, and the legislature has to take action to extend them. So in conversations frequently on how we're going to move forward there. We should also be announcing this week some specific orders that will continue some of the provisions that were put in place with Senate Bill 241 last spring and the governor's original disaster declaration, things like suspending some regulations and waiving some regulations to allow our health providers to continue to do things like telemedicine and the orders about the shareholder meetings so they can be conducted virtually in this environment as well. So that's kind of the news that we had recently. I think you're all well aware we're in a pretty significant acceleration phase within Alaska. It's pretty much everywhere. It's not just travel related. There's widespread community transmission in most of our communities. So in particular, the requirements that we have for intrastate and interstate travel, as well as the protocols that are in place on the Marine Highway System, are going to remain in effect for the foreseeable future. We really think kind of the end goal for this pandemic is when vaccine is widespread available and available to everybody in the state. And if you've heard anything about that, it's going to take a while. Any of the vaccines that are going through trials right now are kind of two courses. So it's not just a one inoculation and done. It's a series. And it'll take some time for that to be in effect. But that's really what we see. So we are certainly encouraging everybody, cities around the state, boroughs, and the public to kind of maintain vigilance as we have a few more months here. We're very hopeful that one of those vaccines or a couple of them will get through all the trials and get approved by the FDA in the near future. And until then, the best options we have are all of those community mitigation strategies and what we call non-pharmaceutical interventions, the things we've all been doing since last winter, washing hands and social distancing and wearing masks and all. So I think I'm gonna stop right there and I'll turn it over to Paul for a few words. And then I think Eliza has a few things to say as well, and we'll be happy to entertain any questions you or the council have. Paul?
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Hope everybody can hear me. As Brian said, my name's Paul Nelson. I'm the director for our state's Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. And what we've what we're attempting to do, and we feel we're successful in this, is to have a more direct engagement with all the levels of community government. So while we recognize that the emergency managers, Brian, our operational guru for the state, he does an incredible job for us, has rallied those emergency managers. What we want to ensure here with this community engagement team is that we are also doing a proactive justice to our elected and appointed officials, not only at the state level, but at our community, both borough and city levels. And so this is our attempt to hear concerns and as Brian mentioned, field questions from you, because we understand, you know, information gets out and it comes to all of us from so many directions. Sometimes it can get a bit confusing. So we want to be able to help you. And if we can answer questions this evening, we'll certainly be taking a copious amounts of notes, and we will get back to you. We promise that. But that's what we're really trying to do. And we've been talking to a lot of communities and mayors, sometimes even with the governor's direct involvement in the phone calls. And we're finding that it's beneficial, not only for us at the state level, but that open communication line. So what I do is in the background overseeing all the great work that our state, federal, and community partners are doing. And then really ensuring that funding is on track, and working with my boss, the commissioner of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and the legislature to ensure that we stay above board on how we're conducting our response. So my team at the State Emergency Operations Center is incredible under Brian's leadership and the Unified Command. I can attest, I've been witness to their dedicated work, often on the weekends, at nights, it doesn't matter. They're working hard for our state, and if there's anything we can do better, we'll be happy to take that feedback and see what we can do to help you all out. And with that, I'll pass it over to Eliza.
Sure. Thanks so much, Paul. This is Eliza Muse, the Department of Health and Social Services. And I really don't have a whole lot to say. I'm just really here to listen. I kind of went through a few of your previous meeting minutes, and especially the EOC reports, to kind of get a sense of sort of continuing or ongoing issues that might be happening. And I also, in these meetings, pull the airport screening data, but it looks like you guys have all of those data in your minutes, and that's part of your EOC report, monthly report there. So I don't really need to go over those. So I'll really just yield my time and here to listen and provide any additional follow-up once this meeting is done. Thanks.
Thanks, you too. And this is Brian Fisher again. And just to make sure it's clear, you know, we had extended the contracts that we had in place with you and the other airports that we were working with this summer through the end of the calendar year. I expect that we'll be having conversations with Mr. Williams and the staff again in early December to look at extending that even further. Although, as I said in my initial comments, the COVID's kind of everywhere. It's widespread community transmission all over the state, but we are still catching plenty of folks as they're coming into the state testing positive as they come into our airport. So we think that's an important strategy and one of the many tools that we have. And I think we'll be looking at keeping that in place until, you know, probably at least through the winter. So that will probably be available there. We've been, like I said at the beginning, we've been working really, really well with Tom and Karen and Phoebe on the money side, and of course Chief Miller. And I just couldn't be more happy to work with the community. You guys have been great, and I think at this point, Madam Mayor, we'll turn it back and answer any questions you or the council have.
Go ahead, Mike. I saw your hand first.
Yes, I thank you very much, you three, for your patience in waiting for this spot in the agenda. And I want to thank you for the support for our program here in in Gustavus. It's been great to work with you. And also, I'd like to thank you for the great ECHO presentations that you do every week. I found them really interesting, and that has really helped. The information in those have helped inform our local plan. I had a one thing that you've recommended recently in the municipal echoes and the science one, I think, were that people get flu vaccines. And I know our clinic has been having a hard time getting supplies of the vaccine, and particularly the senior vaccine, which I've been waiting for. And so I don't know if there's anything that you can do to boost that. That's one question. And then the second one, you ask about what you could do better. What you guys are doing a great job, but with the rather exponential increase in cases in the state, I'm hopeful that the governor will issue some statewide mandates again that would provide a little more teeth and backup to our local mandates. I know he has been reluctant to do that, preferring to give the lead to local governments for their flexibility, et cetera. But we may be getting to where we need statewide mandates, and particularly for mask wearing. So those are my two comments, and thank you again for coming.
Thank you, Member Taylor. And yeah, on the vaccine side, we are definitely encouraging folks. As a matter of fact, our epidemiologists say that now is the perfect time to get the influenza vaccine. Unfortunately, there is a nationwide shortage on what they call the high-dose influenza vaccine, the one that's for seniors especially. So we are definitely, we're raising our hand and shaking our fists and trying to get as much of that into the state as we can, and working with providers like Search and others when we do get it, to make sure it's distributed. But there is, according to our clinical pharmacist, there's kind of a nationwide run on the high dose, and we hope to see more as they get it produced and distributed to the states, and certainly we'll make note of that and share that with our immunization program. And we have, I hate to say this, I'll probably say it a couple of times tonight, but the things that you're sharing with us, we've heard from a number of other cities and boroughs around the state, high dose vaccine being one of them. And I'll also share the message about the mandates. I can tell you one of the reasons that the governor wanted to make sure that the public health disaster emergency was extended was because we did hear from a lot of local government that having the state's public health disaster declaration in place really did provide some backup for the communities around the state that have their own local disasters in place. And that was definitely something, one of the many reasons that he wanted to make sure that was kept in place. But we'll share your concerns with the administration after the call. Thank you.
Tanya, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you all very much for coming to our council meeting, and I appreciate the information. And one of the things we've been talking about as a council is if there's recommendations that we could share with our community as to how to prevent COVID-19 coming to Gustavus, because as you know, we've been super lucky. Just a few handful of asymptomatic cases that didn't spread. We have our school full-time in person right now, which is a luxury. And it's also a vulnerability, because if it does spread, say in the school system, that could affect a lot of different families that may not be in any sort of bubbles together. So we really want to keep it out of Gustavus. And we as the Gustavus City Council are talking about how we can, what advice we can give people, recommendations, because now after 7-9 months of the pandemic, people are of course getting sick of it, but also just need to go to Juneau to shop for dental health, a variety of reasons. So I'm asking you, how can we keep COVID-19 out of Gustavus, and what can we tell people in that regard.
Yeah, so, ma'am, this is Paul. I'll let Brian talk maybe about some CDC guidelines, but I'll tell you, though, what you're saying is something that we hear quite a bit around the state about, you know, it's nobody's really coined the phrase, but it's almost like COVID fatigue, right? It's like some folks are just struggling. You know, there's so many other things that's affected so much of all of our lives, and we've all had to make so many adjustments that there's people, a lot of folks just sometimes are just like, I'm kind of over it. I just want to go back. And so I say one of the biggest pieces of advice that you can give from that perspective is to remind people how successful your community has been, and to just implore them to, you know, kind of quote unquote, stay in the fight here. As Brian mentioned, you know, we're really looking for a wide statewide distribution, a nationwide, and then a statewide distribution of the vaccine. Again, not being that that's the end state, but that's a critical, you know, benchmark in the fight against this disease. And I understand that folks are tired, and like you said, they've got things they've got to get on with. They've got medical appointments. They've got to go to Juneau. They've got to do all these things. But just remind them that we're looking for a statewide distribution of vaccine, and you got to hang in there. You know, that's true statewide. And CDC guidelines, social distancing, you know, wearing a mask, washing your hands, just keep, again, because everybody's so, yeah, I've heard it, you know, they say, I've heard it a million times. Well, you got to keep doing it, you know, and if there's anything Eliza or Brian would like to add to that, please do. But that would be my best advice to tell people.
Sure. Thanks, Paul. And, you know, this is Eliza, and we have testing available at the airport, so at the Juneau Airport, for intrastate travelers, residents of Alaska, to obtain free of charge. That's, you know, one potential risk mitigation measure, as Paul was kind of describing. You know, there's these layers of intervention. Dr. Zink has referred to them as layers of Swiss cheese. While there's holes in every single of those interventions or pieces of cheese taken together, can slow or spread. She's also referred to these sort of interventions as speed bumps. So act like it might already be in your community. Practice that social distancing, keeping your social circles small, staying home as much as is possible. That's great that the schools are open in person. That's, you know, as a mother here up in Anchorage, you know, it's incredibly hard to be working and balancing that. So I commend you for all the interventions you've been able to put in place to allow that in-person schooling. So that's great. But, you know, I think it's just really expect that it might be in your community, and to continue to practice those CDC mitigation measures. Dr. Zink, in her last presentation at a press conference, has moved on from Swiss cheese and speed bumps to refer to the layering as, you know, a coat, a jacket, and mittens. You're not just going to wear, you know, your gloves outside when it's negative, you know, 3 degrees out, but you're going to wear all your layers, which, you know, is another kind of visual or way to approach those mitigation measures when taken together. But again, I just want to do say that the testing is available for Alaska residents, which is also one of those mitigation. So thanks.
Can I just ask a quick follow-up? This is Councilmember Lewis again. And specifically with testing, you know, it was great when we had the state mandates for the out-of-state travel, a real nice protocol of do this and this. And things have changed or evolved. And so what do you think the best line of recommendation for people coming back from Juneau? Should they test once when they get in and then again 5 days later or 7 days later? Or what is the best advice right now?
Well, I can, you know, take it for the interstate mandate, right? It's strict social distancing for 5 days after travel with a negative test. I think, you know, again, to echo Dr. Zink, with travel, there is a risk associated with that. And so if you feel you've been exposed or if you're in a higher risk situation, definitely strict social distance, obtain a test. And if it's available to you, and certainly if you're experiencing any symptoms, to obtain a second test. You know, we don't right now that I'm aware of have an intrastate travel mandate. But I don't know if Brian wants to chime in at all about any additional other strategies. But I think it's really with the high, you know, potential for higher risk exposure, or definitely if you're experiencing symptoms, you know, you should obtain that second test.
Yeah, this is Brian. I would just echo what Eliza said, the testing when you return. But I know we are seeing and have a lot of anecdotal information that a lot of folks end up not getting tested just because they think they have a cold or they think they have a mild case of the regular flu. And, you know, I'd really encourage the residents in Gustavus and really everybody in the state, any symptoms at all, the symptoms for COVID-19 are so similar to cold and flu that even the slightest sniffle or difficulty breathing, any of the symptoms that are listed on the website, really you should go and get a test. And we are committed to be able to support providing those testing supplies as long as we have them. I think the federal government is going to slow down the distribution from the federal government to the states of testing materials, but we're working with the testing manufacturers to buy our own supply and stockpile of that so we can keep all of that testing happening in your community and around the state. And we want people to get tested, you know, if they have the slightest of symptoms, to do that. As you've all heard and you're well aware, it's an awfully sneaky virus, and a lot of people carry it asymptomatically and spread it. So the best encouragement, in addition to testing, if you have to travel, you know, we certainly encourage minimizing travel if you can, but understand folks have to go to Juneau or elsewhere for critical personal needs. So testing upon return there, and then at the slightest hint of any kind of symptoms, definitely. One of the other things I wanted to share, we have heard some confusion about this. If you do happen to have additional cases in the community, and a public health nurse or somebody from search calls and contacts you and says that you're a close contact, or one of your friends or neighbors happens to call you and tell you that they were contacted by the state and they're positive and you're now a close contact, there really is no way to test out a quarantine. If you're a close contact or have been considered one because of the close physical proximity, you know, 6 feet for 15 minutes without a mask, that kind of thing, then you really are supposed to be quarantining for an entire 14 days. There's no way to test out of that. That's the safest way. The incubation period could be, you know, anywhere from 1 to 14 days. And when you're infectious is when it spreads. You know, people may not think that they're infectious because they don't have symptoms, but really, if you hear folks, if you get other cases in town and people are told that they're close contacts, they really need to do the right thing and quarantine for 14 days to protect the rest of the community.
Councilmember Clark, do you have a comment?
Yes, thank you. I appreciate you folks showing up and giving us this information. I'm curious about vaccine. Is there any accurate information when it might come out? And if it is distributed to our community, those that do receive the vaccine, will they be able to travel without encumbrance?
Thanks, Council Member Clark. And there certainly has been some news real recently on the national media about some information about the Pfizer vaccine. However, those vaccines are all still in the middle of their clinical trials, so none of them have made it through the trial process yet. We're very hopeful that we're going to see it by the end of the calendar year. The feds keep telling us at the state level we need to have our plans in place and refined, ready to go by the middle of this month and towards the end of this month. I'm not so sure we'll see it quite yet then. But we are hopeful to see at least the first round of allocations to the states by the end of the calendar year. It's not gonna, we're not gonna get a lot to begin with. It's likely gonna be prioritized initially for frontline healthcare workers. And then following that, as we get more and more of the vaccine into the state, we'll make it kind of more widely available with other first responders and critical infrastructure workers, and then available to the general public as we get enough of that vaccine to be able to distribute statewide. So, we don't have a real good crystal ball. It really depends on how long the trials go and how long the FDA approval process is going to take. I suspect it's not going to take very long once the trials are all over and it's proven safe and effective, just because the whole globe needs to get on from this pandemic. But we're going to make sure that it's safe and effective and all the approvals are in place, and then we'll start getting it. So I don't think it's next week, but we're hopeful by the end of the calendar year we might be able to see the first shipments coming our way.
Thank you, sir.
Are there any other questions from the council? Okay, Whitney, I do see your hand up. Unfortunately, this is just a time for the council to ask questions of the presenters, but we can add your name to the list for public comment after we're done with the presentations. I just wanted to thank Brian and Paul and Eliza for being here, taking the time to answer our questions. We really appreciate you guys waiting for your spot in the agenda, and thank you for all the really good information.
All right. Well, thank you, Ms. Mayor. This is Paul. I'd just like to extend to you that if you need us, we are an email or phone call away. Our contact information is readily available, and we want to let you know that we hope this engagement begins the communications and is not the only communication. So thank you all, and have a good evening.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor. And just in closing, I'd say, we heard that you guys got a bit of snow there last week and had some trouble with the tent down there. And I just want to let you know, we got our share of the wet, heavy snow up here in Anchorage over the weekend. So kind of feeling Chief Miller's pain there with tents collapsing and all that. But thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you so much for your time, and look forward to any follow-up there might be that might come out of the public comment later on this evening. So thanks so much.
Okay, thank you again. Moving on to our other presentation that we have lined up for the evening, and this is for AP&T Gustavus Intertie presentation. So go ahead whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mayor. Can you all flip through the slides as I speak, or would you prefer if I shared my screen and navigated the presentation?
We're good to flip on our end. Thanks, Jason.
Okay, thank you. Well, my name is Jason Custer, and I am Vice President of Business Development with Alaska Power and Telephone Company. I live in Ketchikan, Alaska, and I help AP&T out with various special projects, including this one. I also manage AP&T's electric vehicle incentive program. So if you purchase an EV, you can talk to me about getting an incentive. With me tonight to talk about the Intertie design are Darren Belisle, AP&T's power manager for the Upper Lynn Canal area, Matt Yeamans, project manager with Arcadis, a consultant who's part of the team, Rob Gambrell with Northern Powerline Constructors, another contractor assisting with the project, and Brian Koval with Midnight Sun Environmental. He's in charge of the permitting and environmental work for the project. The other key AP&T employee working on this project is Bill Farrell from our Juneau office, who could not make it tonight. And Bill serves as the project manager. The scope of this presentation tonight is to present the design of the Gustavus Intertie Project. We'll take about 15 minutes to go through the presentation, and then we can take questions if you'd like. And we ask that you please hold your questions till the end of the presentation. As we get started, before we get going, we do recognize there's probably an elephant in the room, which is the AP&T rate case. We understand that the audience may have questions or thoughts about that, but just to make everybody aware, the team that's here tonight is the Intertie Development Team, and the scope of our presentation is presenting the state of this project. If anybody does have questions about the rate case, those would best be directed towards our regulatory team. And I can certainly put you all in touch with them if you do have questions. Please feel free to email those to me using my email address there in the front of the presentation. And I can get those questions about the rate case to the right people if you would like. And there's my email. Thanks, so you can go back. All right. So the objectives of the Gustavus Intertie Project are to displace diesel-based generation, and that will create environmental benefits from displacing and reducing the amount of carbon that is reduced from using fossil fuels. The project has the objective of lowering community energy costs, lowering energy costs for the National Park Service at Glacier Bay National Park, helping to improve and strengthen grid resiliency, improving reliability, including access to contingency generation resources. So interconnecting with the park's power plant and that being available as an additional generation asset. And the overall objective here is to use our existing resources as efficiently as possible. There's hydropower, which is going unutilized, underutilized. By connecting to the park service, we can put that to good use, producing environmental benefits and helping out with the cost of power for everyone. Next slide, please. The project design is fairly simple. It's a 7.2 kV three-phase electrical intertie that goes between the Gustavus distribution system and the Park Service's existing utility system, so connecting two microgrids together. There's a fiber optic cable integrated with the project, which is included for signal and control connections between the Park Service's power plant and the switch in the park, and AP&T's facilities in town. There's also spare capacity on the line for the Park Service's use as well. The design, it's an underground design, so the facilities will be buried or bored through the ground. So there will be very limited, if not no, visual impacts due to the line being buried. The project is about 6.1 miles long altogether and follows the existing road. We were able to design the project so that the project features stay within the road prism, the existing road prism, to minimize impacts. And the project also involves installation of equipment near the Park Service depot that will facilitate switching, voltage regulation, metering to help ensure reliable power. Next slide, please. Here's a map showing the project. As you can see, it follows the existing road right away. It starts over at AP&T's power plant down not too far from the airport, goes down Gustavus Road through town, then out Mountain View Drive before making a turn down Park Road and terminating at the National Park Service's switch. We were able to design the project to keep it all within the road prism, helping to keep it out of wetlands, to minimize the footprint, to utilize the existing footprint. And we're glad and fortunate that it worked out that we're able to do that. Next slide, please. And part of the way that we're able to do that is that we are proposing to use directional boring, which is like drilling a hole sideways through the ground. You know, when we have to cross the road. And here's a cross section of probably the most exciting feature of the project. There is a anadromous fish stream that we need to cross. And to do that, we're actually going to bore down underneath the stream and up the other side. So this is taken from the engineering drawings. You can see this is what it looks like. It's really cool that this technology is available. It really helps us keep the footprint to a minimum and avoid obstacles, avoid environmental impacts. And it's cool to see these innovative type processes and equipment being applied in Gustavus. So we're excited for that. Next slide, please. And this is what the boring machine looks like. This is not the exact boring machine, I don't think. This gives you a sense. We'll be bringing this piece of equipment to the community, and that will allow us to do the most complex parts of the project. Next slide, please. So the timeline we're looking at now, we are currently going through the design phase. We have completed a field survey that helped us ground truth some of the things in prior plans and documents that had already been done to get a sense of the wetlands and to help us figure out how to optimize the design to minimize impacts. We completed the preliminary design, and the Park Service is currently reviewing that and has provided comments. We're busy responding to those comments, and we'll be incorporating them into a detailed final design submittal. We have submitted permit applications to the State Department of Transportation and to the Park Service for use of their road right-of-way. We're fortunate. These are the only two permitting approvals that we need to seek for this project. Those processes are already underway. We're hoping that we can begin construction in the second quarter of 2021. So after we finish the design, we'll be finalizing the construction agreement, and then we'll order materials so that hopefully we can begin construction this spring. We anticipate that completion will occur in the fourth quarter of 2021. That will be, you know, at the end, we'll be demobilizing and commissioning the line and energizing it. And after that, then we will be able to substantially reduce diesel-based generation in the region. Full funding for the project has been appropriated by Congress and is available to support completion of construction, which is great. Next slide, please. And after the project is complete, there's really going to be a great environmental benefit to the community. Already talked about most of this stuff here. We will be using a stormwater pollution prevention program to mitigate any short-term impacts there could be to surface or groundwater quality. There will be archaeological monitoring at the site to avoid impacts to cultural resources, if there happen to be any. We have, thanks to Brian's good work and site visit, we optimized the route and the design to avoid wetlands and sensitive areas. And that's been a key objective of this project: minimize the footprint, minimize the impact, and use the existing road prism to the fullest extent possible. The next slides put the environmental benefits into perspective. If we could please move ahead. So the benefits in 1 year, the project, it's estimated, would displace about 600 tons of carbon dioxide. That would be more than 38,000 gallons of fuel that don't need to travel to the community anymore, to Glacier Bay. That's like leaving 915 barrels of oil in the ground per year. Or another way to think of it is the equivalent of taking 128 passenger vehicles off the road for a year. Or you could look at it and compare it to the carbon sequestration benefit of 707 acres of U.S. forest, or 1.47 million miles not driven by passenger vehicles. Sometimes it's hard to convert from gallons of diesel or tons of carbon dioxide to real world measures, but the EPA has some tools available on their website that we use to do that. Next slide, please. Those were just the benefits for 1 year. So if you wanted to think about the overall impact, you could multiply those benefits by 30 years, which would be the probably a minimum asset life for this project. And so there you're looking at 18,000 tons of carbon dioxide avoided. And I think it's really awesome that you can create this type of benefit stream and avoid this much carbon in a community the size of Gustavus. It's really great that we have the opportunity to do that. And we certainly appreciate the partnership of the Park Service, the community, the efforts by the U.S. delegation to give us the opportunity to do this. Also, I figured, did the math, you wanted to think about the number of miles not driven by passenger vehicles. You're converting to that metric over a 30-year period, that's like 1,771 trips around the earth in terms of passenger miles. Next slide, please. And this gives you the assumptions used in the estimates. If anybody is a econometric nerd like me, you can go in there, play around with the numbers yourself, and you can use the EPA's equivalency calculator to run different assumptions if you'd like. I don't trust stuff a lot of times unless I see the assumptions, so I made sure to put them here for you all. Next slide, please. Just quickly to end the presentation, I wanted to highlight other potential points of interest to the community. As the cost of energy is decreased by this project, some of the opportunities that are out there to convert to beneficial electrification become more economically viable. So just an update on what's going on with that. We still have, and we're continuing into 2021, AP&T's electric vehicle incentive program. It's called AMP Up. We've got a page on our website for it. And we actually just decreased the minimum battery size from 16 kilowatt hours to 14 kilowatt hours. So if you were thinking about getting the electric Harley Davidson, well, that will now qualify for AP&T's incentive if you're looking for some alternative entertainment during COVID. Also, we expanded the AMP Up program so that municipal electric vehicle chargers can qualify if there's interest in that. And Gustavus actually has the highest rate of use of this program out of all of the communities we serve, both in the total number of people and the percentage of the population. So kudos to you guys for pioneering use of electric vehicle technology in Southeast Alaska. We have an electric school bus up in Tok now that's operational there in our Tok service area, so we'll be evaluating how that performs. We are encouraging consumers to consider air source heat pumps, which is a type of electric heat pump or heating device that's three times as efficient as a resistance heating unit. We have a section on our website now called Bring the Heat that talks about that technology, if there's interest in that. And there's also a group in Juneau, Alaska Heat Smart, that's a great resource and has information. We've been talking to them, seeing if there's a way that we can collaborate in some of our service areas outside of Juneau on special projects. So air source heat pumps, another opportunity to use the clean energy in the community to meet heating and home energy needs. And AP&T continues to maintain its hydro tracking tool on our website. So if you want to see the percentage of Gustavus's energy that's being generated from hydropower, you can go onto our website and do that. And then finally, something else we're working on right now is evaluating a battery project that we would potentially install at Falls Creek to help optimize the use of energy there and to increase the useful output of the project. Our engineers are taking a look at that, some of the different batteries and technology that is out there and the economics, and we're hoping that we can maybe come up with a concept to try out here in Gustavus, similar to what Cordova did. So I believe that brings us to our last slide. I want to thank you all for the opportunity to talk about this project, and we would be glad to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Jason. Councilmember Buckeye, go ahead.
Jason, thanks so much for the presentation there. This project's kind of a culmination of a long journey, so it's exciting to see it arriving. One element that I had a question about was, will the existing diesel generation facility at the east end of this line near the airport, will that remain as a backup or will that be removed? And I guess the second part to that question is, if that is removed, does the existing diesel generation facility at the park provide low water flow backup for the town?
Good question. So AP&T would keep all of the existing generation assets in place. Our preference would be, and I believe dispatch is set up so that we use the clean hydropower from Falls Creek first before any other resources. Right now there are times when that is being underutilized. But we would maintain both the diesel plant in town and also the Park Services diesel plant as kind of the second line of generation resources to meet the community's needs.
Council Member Taylor, go ahead.
Hello, Jason, and welcome to our meeting, and thanks for waiting through our agenda for so long. It's great to have you here. I had a resident call me yesterday and ask just a question out of interest about the decision to bore under the Salmon River rather than attaching the line to the bridge in a conduit. And I couldn't answer the engineering decision for boring under the river rather than attaching to the bridge, but perhaps one of you could enlighten us on that decision. And thank you again for coming.
Sure, thank you, Councilman. Probably one of the best people to answer that would either be Matt or Rob. Matt or Rob, do you want to speak to that a little bit? I know we had thought about the conduit going over the bridge at one point.
So that's a good question. Ultimately, it's cleaner and easier to go under the river in order to attach the bridge. The
A structural analysis would have to be done on the bridge, and so it just takes a longer process and potentially additional permitting. So the quickest and easiest way is to go under the Salmon River, and then to put a the plan is to put a spare conduit in place in case we need to pull through that one in the future.
No, listen.
Councilmember Vander Zanden, go ahead.
I just was curious if it had been decided yet if the park will be considered a single customer and if they'll be buying power at a bulk.
The park would be treated, there would be a special contract between AP&T and the park. And to my understanding, I don't have all of the details in front of me for tonight. It's the same concept as was discussed in the November 2018 meeting, where AP&T would follow RAPA's suggestion that the revenue from selling energy or from the sale of energy to the park ends up going into the COPA as a credit to the COPA account. So similar to what's done with AELMP and Greens Creek. So that way the revenue coming in from sales to the park service, benefit of that flows through to the ratepayers through the COPA account.
Thank you.
Is there any other council question for Jason or Matt or any of his crew? Okay, it doesn't look like it. Thank you again, Jason, and everybody else for being here. It's a really nice presentation, and I appreciate it. Your time a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to move on to general public comment. So we've got some folks that are on the list, and Janosch, I see that your hand is up. We'll put you on the list for public comment. Just as a reminder, please state your full name before speaking. And if you hear a comment that has already been made, please refrain from repeating that, which has been addressed by another speaker. And of course, please be respectful. So Susan, we've got you on the list first. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and greetings to the council and assembled folks. I'd like to make a comment about broadband. I've submitted the text for the benefit of the council to Madam Clerk, and she can forward that to you if you're so interested. My comment is I applaud Byte Networking's efforts to install fiber to the home cabling in Gustavus. This is an excellent addition to our infrastructure for moving toward better internet service in our town. The biggest challenge at this point, however, is to obtain an adequate middle mile connection as a source to feed that last mile delivery capacity. Whether it comes in as low Earth orbit satellite internet from the sky or some other means, we need to obtain adequate bandwidth into Gustavus for distribution, not just to the affluent households who can afford a $90 per month subscription, but to all our kids and all our businesses and all our townsfolk who want to participate in the future global exchange of goods and education and ideas. I want to strongly urge the City Council to be extremely cautious in financial commitments that allow our community to be stranded in the shallows of first generation broadband, 10 megabits per second download, or even second generation broadband, 25 megabits from the six-year-old FCC standard, while the rest of the state and the nation, for that matter, moved to fifth-generation speeds of 100 to 1,000 megabits per second. I stand ready, willing, and able to work with any other community members in Gustavus to help figure out how to solve this middle mile sourcing problem for Byte Networking's customers, as for all of us, provided these volunteers are willing to abide by City of Gustavus ordinances and resolutions and State of Alaska and U.S. federal laws, particularly with respect to transparency and accountability of government. I call here for volunteers. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Are there any council members that would like to ask a clarifying question of Susan? Okay, I believe next on our list for public comment is Whitney Rapp.
Hello, my name is Whitney Rapp, and my first question is directed towards the emergency response folks with COVID. Thank you for all your contributions over the last few months. As a community in the unorganized borough in a reporting region of all communities of population under 1,000 people, our reporting is a guessing and hunting game as to where the cases are. Travis does a great job, but our region had a case yesterday, but where that is, it's hard to know. As no community has claimed it. Can we opt in to release town names, particularly as our provider, CERT, is reporting communities testing positive? We are still missing one case from state data, so we really are dependent on the data source, the state data source, unlike larger municipalities that have their own incident command. And the second part of it is we are also not getting reporting on method of acquisition. Looking backwards in the state data, it appears our community has had both community and secondary transmissions, which is surprising as I think most of us believe it was just travel. How can we get that data at a more relevant timeline?
Do any council members have questions for Whitney? Okay. Next on the list for public comment is Jan.
Hello, good evening, everyone. This is Jan Kunert. I have a couple questions. Questions actually to Jason about the Inertai project. Actually, that was me too, that called Council Member Taylor about the drilling underneath the bridge and you know, the technical reason how this came to, and I still strongly believe that cleaner will be to put a conduit on the bridge, and that's what the bridges are designed for, to carry conduits, not drilling underneath the rivers. It may be easier, but I think from the environmental perspective, that might be a little overkill. That's just my comment. I had another another question, a kind of grew over time. My wife found some study that was done in 2005 on request, I believe, was on a request of National Park Service about the Inertai connecting the future hydro plant to National Park. And that study was done was contracted by some engineering firm, I believe, out of Montana. And that study was pretty detailed and give the estimate by Dan was, the study was done by CTA Architects Engineers Billings, Montana. And in that study, there was different scenarios, how it could be done and for how much. And one of the studies estimate was about a million or something. And the most expensive design studied there was $2 million. And that was all the whistles that can be. So I understand that the, you know, it's 2020, you know, 15 years later. I just wonder, you know, the difference is significant. You know, how it's possible that they grew to $8 million, you know, this is $6 million more than the most expensive design engineered in 2005. And the second question comes with that, you know, how much money will stay in gas tables? And the third question will be, can you guarantee that our rates will go lower? Because that's, I think this is the most important at this point. I strongly support connect, you know, the park service, get away from the fuel, from, you know, fossil fuels. But I think the most important thing to us, Agastavus residents, will be the rates. Park service was opposing this project, you know, since the beginning. And I, you know, didn't connect for 12 years, didn't actually, you know, just recently started to connect. And I would like to see if you as a company, as AP&T, could commit to, you know, actually helping residents here, because we already have most environmental power here, and with more vehicles, electric vehicles, by the way, we own three of them, there might not be enough green power to Gustavus residents, and we will be paying the bill for to connect National Park. So how would you, could you tell Gustavus residents, you know, that you guarantee us that the rate will go for such and such number, and how much money from that project will stay actually with Gustavus? I didn't hear anything about, you know, who will be drilling, you know, how will be done, or anything like that, you know. So that's what concerns me. Thank you.
Are there any clarifying questions from the council members for Janusz? Go ahead, Mike.
Since this is a what Janusz is asking is a question I think of a lot of interest to the community, and Jason's still on. If you don't mind, Madam Mayor, I'd like to waive our usual rule and ask Jason to address the question on the rates and so forth. Thanks.
Sure. Jason, if you are willing to do that, we can go ahead and go for it.
Sure. Thank you. Through the chair, in November of 2018, AP&T had a community meeting, and at that meeting, AP&T had performed a detailed calculation or cost analysis that looked at what the likely rate decrease would look like for an average residential customer. And they passed out a handout about that, that broke it out. And at that meeting, the estimate was that the average residential customer would save 11 to 12 cents per kilowatt hour. We believe that the cost savings in over the no intertie scenario are still likely to be in the same range, but we haven't developed a new version of that type of analysis for this meeting tonight. But it's reasonable to expect that the cost savings should still be in the same range that was presented in November of 2018. And I checked with our CEO to make sure that was still the case, that we were still looking at that range roughly, and he confirmed. Again, the way that the special contract would be set up would be that the revenue from selling energy to the Park Service is then credited to the COPA account. So comes, and that's how the community enjoys the benefit of lower cost power, is through that type of mechanism, which is what RAPA recommended.
Thank you, Jason. Are there any other council questions for Janusz's comment? Okay, the next person I see with a raised hand for a public comment is a number 752-2153. Please go ahead and state your name and address the council. Okay, maybe they will come back. Greg Streveler, I see your hand up. Go ahead whenever you're ready.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, Greg.
Thank you. I guess I will follow up on Janusz's thoughts, which my mind takes me in a similar vein. It's an admonition to the council, I guess. I've been involved with the Falls Creek project since Dick first had the idea. And I never forget the conversation I had with Dick after the rates came out, after his ownership had been transferred to APT. And to paraphrase what he said to me, he said, you know, this project, when it was finished, he got reimbursed for a very, very large share of the cost of it. And he had thought from the projections he'd made that it should result down the line after the rate case that occurred when the transfer to the company happened, that we should be looking at a very substantial rate reduction. And I think everybody knows that that did not happen. And in fact, now we have surprisingly high rates for a small hydro outfit in south central and southeast Alaska. Our rates are, I almost would say, anomalously high, and now being considered for being jacked further. And so I guess I would recommend to the council that you watch with a skeptical eye on how things proceed on the estimate you just got from Jason, just because of the history of the situation. And then my second question, my second comment is that another thing I think the council would do well to keep an eye on is, would follow up a little bit on one of the other comments, and that is that we will at some point run out of green energy, although I applaud APT for doing what they can to engineer a better use of what we have, but still the creek's only so big. And once the benefits that Jason has mentioned, which I think are pretty real for the short-term future, depend an awful lot on whether there's an excess of power, green power. And I'm hoping that APT and the Park Service and the city are thinking ahead a ways and looking for alternative green sources, of which there are several possibilities, so that we don't end up at the end of all this kind of pull the bag again. Thank you. That's my comments.
Thank you, Greg. Are there any council members who wish to ask a clarifying question of Greg? Go ahead, Shelley.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I guess I'd like to ask Greg to elaborate on what the
alternative green sources, of which there are plenty, consist of?
Sorry, Greg, you may have to unmute again.
There, can you get me now?
Yes, thank you.
I better make it quick then. I'm sorry, I must not have been, must not have caught this. So, number one, Volcanic Array at the south end of the runway. Number two, and probably the best one, is hydropower from the marine, from Icy Passage. And there was a study done back a little more than a decade ago that showed it had a very high potential for that. The park has a very high potential too down at Point Gustavus. If the park wanted to be jointly involved, you could run a line down there and catch all the power we could ever use. And then the third one is wind. That is more episodic, depends an awful lot on batteries. The fourth one is one that Dick thought of years ago, which was to catch the extra water that comes through at high water periods at Falls Creek and capture it by electrolytically dissociating it into hydrogen and oxygen, and then later at low period times, running a fuel cell, a hydrogen fuel cell. So those are the options I know of. Thank you.
How about encouraging?
Are there any other council questions for Greg? Okay, thank you, Greg, very much. I wanted to give the phone number another chance. I'm sorry that I moved on before you could unmute. I'm not sure if you're still on, but I'll give you a second.
Let's see.
Okay, it looks like you're unmuted if you are ready for public comment. So 752-2153, you are unmuted, but we're not hearing anything. I'm not sure if it's a technical difficulty or not, but I'm going to suggest that maybe you email your comment or question to either Phoebe or myself, and we'll try to address it. And I do see that Whitney and Jan have their hands raised again, but I'd like to ask you to wait for your second round of public comment until the towards the end of the meeting, when we do have that available, so we can give other people a shot, and we'll go ahead and move on. But I see that Jake and Bree also have their hand up, so go ahead whenever you're ready.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor Canmore. Can you hear me all right?
Yep.
Great. So this is Jake Olson, Chief of Maintenance for Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve. I'm the local project manager for the Intertie Project, which is a project that I initially created in our funding system in 2005, reinitiated in 2008, and finally, after all that time, It's pretty close to the construction phase. So I just wanted to thank the city council, the previous city councils for their involvement, which is a lot bigger deal than I think maybe you know, because the work of those city councils and the work of the kind of the subgroup of Greg, Jim Makoviak, and John Nixon, a lot of those ideas became the scope of work that you see today, which includes the microgrids, keeping the park generators as part of the system. There's a lot to it. The city council previous resolutions were able to be shared with a congressional delegate, and it really it did a lot to form the project as it is now. So I don't have any specific comments except for to thank all of you, thank Jason for his presentation, and also just put it out there for people that have more specifics, site specifics for the project that we're not able to answer in this call because it's a city meeting. You're welcome to call me in my office tomorrow if those haven't been answered tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Jake. Are there any council members that have questions for Jake? Okay. Are there any other members of the public that have not spoken yet that would like to give public comment on non-agenda items? It does not look like it. Again, I'd like to thank all of the folks that hung around and gave a presentation tonight, and for all of the folks that gave public comment that maybe didn't have your questions answered because this is a city meeting, I would like to encourage you to email either folks from the state or from AP&T or myself to get those questions answered, and we'll do the best that we can for you. I'd like to circle back around to some of the committee and staff reports because Travis and Leah came on a little bit late. So Travis, do you still have a report that you'd like?
Yeah, sure. I can just go real fast. I don't have too much to really add that to what Brian and his group told us earlier, except just like a couple numbers. Two weeks ago, we had 12 people fly in and take that initial test, at the airport, and only three of those people followed up for that voucher test. And I know that while they were talking and recommended maybe just recommending that second test, but when you fly into town to Juneau just for a weekend, that first test when you fly back into town is not going to tell you if you picked up the virus. The PCR test is not going to tell you if you picked up the virus in that short of period. It takes between 5 to 7 days is what I hear in all my meetings for that to really spark and get into your system to test positive. So that follow-up test is a super important test to really keeping making sure that time is, or the virus is not being spread in the community. And during that time between your first and second test is minimizing those interactions and not going out into the public and not doing that stuff. Juneau is just as hot as any other place around the world right now. There is just as like Ketchikan. I got off a good phone call with Abner Hogue out of Ketchikan today. And if you read their numbers, they're having a good spike in numbers. And in Sitka, they're having some number spikes, and they're seeing a lot of symptomatic patients come out of these positive cases that they're having. Somewhere, Abner even kind of just roughly threw out the number of 90%. And those symptoms are anywhere from like a runny nose, dry cough, your normal allergy type symptoms. So like they were saying, if you have a symptom, get tested and do all of that. In one of my last meetings too, I was listening to, they were talking about how Coleman Cutchinson's he's in charge of testing, was talking about how the Abbott ID Now test, if done properly, is just as effective as the PCR test at telling you if you have the virus now, not if you've had the virus during this period of time. And, the way that he explained it, our clinic has been doing that procedure the right way from day one. So that ID now test that we've been doing in Gustavus has been an effective tool that we've had in town too. So this test, make that follow-up test too. That's one of the best ways. And like I've been saying from the very beginning, the best way to keep it out of Gustavus is just not to travel. There's plenty of ways to order food. I just made my Safeway order and all that good stuff to get that here without having to go into town for unnecessary travel and putting yourself in a scenario where you could catch it. I did get some texts from Brian while we were, while everybody else was giving comments. So I'll just do a couple little quick follow-ups on that, mainly to Whitney's stuff. So he texts Dr. Zink in the middle of all of this and asked if we were ever able to figure out how to announce smaller communities when they test positive in regions or census areas. And she responded that leaders can work with a public health nurse. If we see that in our region, like the one that came up, I can call the public health nurse and get that information from them. I do want to add that we do have a really great public health nurse in Sue Weber. She's invested into Gustavus. She comes here and visits all the time. And if she sees the word Gustavus with a positive case, she calls me before search calls me, and sometimes before the patients even know that they have it. So she's really good at notifying me. But with all of these upticks and cases that we're having, that's slowing the process down and really making it hard for them to notify people out there. And even in cases where they're not calling secondary contacts, and even some of those, they're having the people that test positive do all of that and just tell them to quarantine. So with that, the other one was on, sorry, I gotta go back and get that. The other question was kind of, we had a bunch of other texts going on, sorry. The tracking down the methods of transmission is gonna be pretty hard to determine. And so it probably won't be totally definitive is all I got on that answer. So I'll get some, a little bit more with that and follow up on that to see how we can do better with our side of it too, with public health, and get more information when hopefully we don't get another positive anytime soon. But if we do, I'll make sure that we try to get better information on the follow-up on the on how they caught it if we can. So other than that, I don't have anything else. Thanks.
Thank you, Travis. And thank you for being in communication with folks from the state and answering Whitney's questions so quickly. Really appreciate it. Tanya, do you have a question for Travis?
Yeah, thanks. I was just curious, Travis, what do you think we can do to increase those follow-up tests to get people to come back after 5 days or 7 days to test again? Any ideas?
Not right offhand. I mean, as far as I understand, the Cody and Cam down at, well, they're at the fire hall now, are really recommending that and telling them to, and letting them know that. I don't know. I really don't. It's, I put out the information every week on a couple different methods, and we recommend it. I've been talking about it for months and months and months. So, I don't know how I can put it into their brains any differently than us telling them to do that. It's kind of that similar fear I have of buying home tests with CARES money for after any testing in the future, is how getting that person to come and test when they should test and not testing early or testing late or abusing that the limited test that we'll be able to buy. So those are just a couple.
Great, thanks. Just kind of one follow-up. Do you think maybe having the paperwork available would help? I know that a lot of people don't have printers, and you can get the paperwork at both the clinic, the Asymptomatic Saturday, and the tents, right? But I wonder if it would help to have the paperwork available for people to fill out in advance or something.
Are you referring to like the voucher part of it?
Yeah, I haven't done the airport part. So I've only done the asymptomatic at search, which is, you know, just a...
So yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. So everything with the airport is over an Alaska portal. So if you read the emails that I sent out, I've got a big list of directions on it, and that's done through a portal that's been sourced through another group, the Alaska Secure app.com, I believe is off the top of my head, but it's all done through there. And they, you have to fill out you have to sign up and get an account, and then you file a declaration every time you fly. That declaration just says where, you know, that answer a bunch of questions saying you don't have the virus, where you're coming from, in state or out of state. And then, you can take the test. And then after that, after 7 days, it automatically generates you a voucher within that portal. And then you have to go back in that portal and, put your name in there and bring it in saying you've filled out that portal. You've done the, voucher on the portal. And then we just give you the test. So it's all done through that portal and tracked through the state system that way.
Okay. How about the search clinic? I guess that would be maybe talking to them and seeing if the paperwork could be available at City Hall or something.
I don't know if they'll do that. I mean, you can just get it when you pull up there and fill it out, just as easy as, I guess, filling it out ahead of time. I only made it available on the internet to help speed up the process a little bit. So as far as I understand, most people bring it in printed already. It's kind of like they've already got that procedure already done, and I haven't heard that it's a super slow process. So ours is a little bit longer because of the internet portal thing.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead, Councilmember Buckeye.
Hi, Travis. Yeah, I wanted to follow up on something that Councilmember Lewis brought up during Brian and Paul and Eliza's presentation, and that was the school, and that how, you know, in one sense, it's fantastic that our school is open. It's actually the only school in Chatham School District that hasn't had to resort to some alternative instruction due to cases or threats of cases so far this school year. However, and I'm also applauding the efforts that they have put forth to make that happen. However, I was wondering whether there's a need to kind of just reinforce or redouble that vigilance that Brian Fisher spoke about in communicating with the school. And I didn't know whether you've had any communications with the school recently discussing the increases in Juneau in the region, and or whether you need somebody to interact with the school there.
Yeah, so thanks for the question and comments there. But I haven't been at the school in the last couple of weeks, but Brad and I do talk on a regular basis on all different types of things, COVID related, and we talk a lot. So I also want to make sure that we're not just thanking Brad and all of them. It's really, it's everybody in Gus Davis that hasn't been traveling and taking these precautions seriously and washing your hands and wearing your mask correctly, covering your nose, not gathering in these large groups and doing those type of things. That's really what's kept it out of Gus Davis more than the other Chatham school district areas, is that we've been taking it so serious. And as long as we keep taking it serious and we don't try to give people reasons to bring it back to Gus Davis, and then we should be able to do a pretty good job. I mean, we're not going to be able to keep it out forever, whatever this new, or if it is a new strain or whatever's going on around in Southeast with Ketchikan and Sitka being super symptomatic. And I'm sure it's like that in Juneau. I just haven't talked to Tom Matisse in a while. He hasn't been on our Southeast call, but it's really just trying to stay away until until that vaccine comes out and it's wide enough spread to come into, and the vaccine is wide enough spread and taken to help slow and mitigate this problem even more. And even when the vaccine does come, not saying that we're going to get any into Gus Davis right away, but when it does come, like they said, there's a 25 or a 28 day waiting period between your first and second dose. Just because you got your first dose doesn't mean you're home free and you're not going to get sick. And even after your second dose, we still don't know how long the immunity is on this. And in a meeting that John McLaughlin, the epidemiologist, said earlier today, he was really keen on the word, the preliminary data is showing 90% effective rate. So it's just the first data coming out. There's going to be more data coming out on this that's going to show that data too. So we still have, it's still a long fight ahead of us with this whole process. And I know we all want to go and travel and do a lot of cool things and do that, but that's what's going to get us in trouble and that's what's going to bring it back. So we've canceled this, the school has canceled all of its school programs, traveling programs or sports programs for the time being. And I really think as long as we keep doing what we're doing in Gustavus and looking at it and making the fight every day and doing what we're doing, we're going to do good and we're going to pull through this probably better than most of the other places, but we have to realize it's going to be a long winter. And like I said, that vaccine might not come. I've been told that it comes in. This is the Pfizer ones, the negative 80. It's got to be stored at negative 80. We're most likely not going to get a freezer. Search is probably not going to give us one of those freezers right away. I've also been told that they come in like 975 doses at a time. Right, that's what I've heard, that they come in 975 doses at a time. And unless we could give out 975 doses before it got too warm and went bad, then I don't see us getting that vaccine right away. So I'd be more hopeful that we're probably going to see something at towards the end of the year, beginning of the year, when some of the other ones come out that don't have to be stored at these negative degree temperatures as well.
Thanks, Travis. Thanks also for maintaining that communication with the school there.
Yep, thanks.
Any other council questions for Travis? Okay, thanks a lot, Travis. And the last committee and staff report that I wanted to give another round to was the GVA. Leah, are you on here still?
Hi, thank you, Madam Mayor, Council Members, Tom, Phoebe. Yes, I'm still here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Hello. Okay. Well, it's like 3 minutes past nine on my clock, and I had this whole report and a lot of things that I was going to say. But I think in view of the time, that you probably don't want to be listening to me talk a whole bunch right now. So what I would say is that I think it's important for the general public to know what the Gustavus Business Association is doing at the moment. So I think I'm going to put together a whole newsletter and circulate it out to as many people as possible just to give an update of what the GVA is doing for the community, for marketing, for businesses, for the economy. So I think at this time, you have the reports in front of you. I will circulate out that newsletter and people are welcome to ask me questions. But at this time, I will ask if anybody on the meeting at the moment has any questions directly, and I will not talk a whole bunch about anything that at this late hour that is not necessary. Does anybody have any questions?
All right, doesn't look like there's any council questions for you, Leah.
Okay. Sounds good. I'll save you that. I'll bring out a newsletter, ask me questions at a later date. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Leah, and thanks for all your good hard work that you're doing at the GVA. It's great to see these updates. You're doing a stellar job. Okay, on to the consent agenda. So we'll go through the items on the consent agenda. Phoebe will show them on the screen and I'll give a brief explanation and Phoebe will explain a few of the NCOs. First is the certificate of records destruction and Okay, sorry. So first is item 10. This is a certificate of records destruction, and this is just something that Karen does on a schedule, a pretty regular procedure. The next item is the City of Gustavus waiving the rights to file a protest of the Snug Harbor liquor license transfer and renewal. And I talked briefly about this at the work session on Monday. This is Stacy Proctor is selling Eugene Farley's share in the company after he passed away. And then we have four NCOs. Phoebe, did you want to say anything about these?
Sure, I can speak to them briefly. The first one here, FY21-12, is moving the funds from the endowment fund account into the endowment fund checking account for this year's or next calendar year's endowment fund grant program. This will have a public hearing on December 14th. Hold on. The next one is FY21-11. This is amending departmental budgets for this fiscal year. This is funding the Gustavus Visitors Association for the second half of the fiscal year, and also has some other account movements around as different expenses and income amounts have changed. This also will have a public hearing at the December 14th general meeting. The next one is NCO FY21-10. This is zeroing out our encumbered road maintenance funds out of our AMLIP, Alaska Municipal League Investment Portfolio account, investment savings account. We're closing out our encumbered account and then starting to tap funds out of the unencumbered account that the council had set aside a couple years ago for funding our road maintenance costs for this fiscal year. So we'll have a public hearing on December 14th. And lastly is FY21-09, non-code ordinance. This is approving the transfer of funds from our AMLIP CARES Act Relief Fund, where we initially deposited our CARES Act funds back to our checking account for the June, July, and August expenditures that we reported to the state. And this will have a public hearing on December 14th.
Thank you, Phoebe. And the last item on the consent agenda is the approval of the issuance of the Salmon River Small Boat Harbor Boat Launch Repair RFQ. And this is a repair and restoration of the tow blanket at the base of the ramp from the erosion. So, do any members of the public wish to have any item removed from the consent agenda? If so, please raise your hand and I will call on you. Okay, seeing none. Do any council members wish to have any items removed from the consent agenda? Okay, seeing none, I will entertain a motion to adopt the consent agenda.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is Clark. I move to adopt the consent agenda by unanimous consent as presented. Do I have a second?
Taylor seconds.
Okay, it's been moved by Councilmember Clark and seconded by Councilmember Taylor. So the consent agenda is passed by unanimous consent. Moving on to item 10, new business. The next item for this is CY20-23, emergency declaration. Do I have a motion?
Madam Mayor, this is Councilmember Taylor. I move to adopt resolution 20 or CY 20-23, a resolution by the City of Gustavus declaring a second local emergency in response to COVID-19 and a request for state and federal assistance.
Is there a second?
This is Councilmember Lewis. I second.
Thank you. Okay, this resolution has been moved by Councilmember Taylor and seconded by Councilmember Lewis. So I have to read this into the record, so bear with me here. So, City of Gustavus, Alaska, Resolution CY20-23, a resolution by the City of Gustavus declaring a second local emergency in response to COVID-19 and a request for state and federal assistance. Whereas COVID-19 is a respiratory disease that can result in serious illness and death and is caused by the SARS-CoV-2 virus, a new strain of the coronavirus that has not been previously identified in humans and is easily transmittable person to person. And whereas COVID-19 poses an imminent threat to human health, safety, and welfare to the residents of the City of Gustavus, and President Donald J. Trump declared a national emergency in response to the virus pandemic. And on March 11th, 2020, the state of Alaska declared a public health emergency in response to the anticipated outbreak of the virus in Alaska. And the State of Alaska Public Health Emergency Declaration is scheduled to expire on November 15th, 2020. And the City of Gustavus passed CY20-11, declaring a local emergency in response to COVID-19 and a request for state and federal assistance on March 24th, 2020, which will expire on November 24th, 2020. And a substantial number of the workforce in the City of Gustavus have children attending the Gustavus School and are now desperately searching for childcare solutions. And the economy generated from independent and cruise ship travelers during the short summer months supports the year-round businesses, citizens, and governments in the City of Gustavus. And the cruise ships that normally come to Glacier Bay and contribute to the economy of the Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve, which contributes to the economy of the City of Gustavus, originate from Seattle, Washington, and Vancouver, Canada. And during the week of March 9th, 2020, the local emergency supported by the independent and cruise ship travelers suffered catastrophic news. The State Department and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommended travel restrictions on cruise ships. The Port of Seattle described it was closing its cruise ship terminals in two-week increments. At least two cruise lines voluntarily halted all cruise travel for 60 days, and the Prime Minister of Canada closed all cruise ports in Canada until July. And it is essential to implement local emergency powers given the potential ability of the virus to cause death or injury to people, necessitating measures to protect the public health, safety, and welfare. And in order to contain any potential harm that may be caused by the virus, state and federal assistance is needed to supplement local efforts to respond to this public health emergency. And pursuant Alaska Statute 26.23.140, local disaster emergencies, the Gustavus City Council may declare the existence of an emergency, and this Gustavus City Council deems it necessary to declare a local emergency to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the residents of the City of Gustavus, and the City Council requests the Governor of Alaska continue to provide state assistance to the city in its response to the virus, including assistance for fire protection and the provision of other funds, services, functions, supplies, or materials determined by the mayor and or his her designee in consultation with local emergency agencies to be necessary to meet the public safety and welfare needs arising from or incidental to COVID-19 and to recover from the damages caused. And the City of Gustavus City Council further authorizes the Gustavus Emergency Operations Center to implement any orders issued by the City Council or the mayor if circumstances do not permit an emergency meeting of the council, which are necessary to prevent the transmission of infectious disease, and to take measures to ensure that all cases of contagious disease are subject to proper control and treatment. And the Emergency Operations Center shall obtain the City Council's approval or that of the mayor if circumstances do not permit an emergency meeting of the council prior to implementing any orders, one, related to private property, two, related to mass quarantine or isolation, or three, related to rationing of goods or supplies, and public health related order, if any, shall be consistent with federal or state public health official recommendations, and all resources of the city government, including city personnel, are hereby available as necessary to deal with emergency and may be transferred or altered in function for the purpose of performing or facilitating performance services responsive to this emergency. And while the potential extent and effect of COVID-19 cannot yet be known, it remains vital for the City of Gustavus to be prepared and take all needed precautions throughout the entire time frame of the emergency related to COVID-19. And because of the ongoing nature of the emergency, which includes extensive community spread of COVID-19 nationwide and in Alaska, the risk of potential morbid conditions with the advent of flu season, the risk of disease transmission from residents, and the seasonal travel industry traveling to Gustavus from pandemic hotspots, and the lack of healthcare capacity to respond to the community outbreak, this declaration of local emergency shall remain in effect until September 13th, 2021. Evaluation of the expiration or termination date of this declaration will include consideration of a declaration that the virus is no longer deemed a federal and state emergency. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Gustavus City Council adopts resolution CY20-23, providing section 1, the City of Gustavus hereby declares a local emergency to exist within the city. A copy of this resolution shall be filed promptly with the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Section 2. The City of Gustavus requests that the Governor of Alaska provide such state assistance as may be available to meet the ongoing emergency created by COVID-19 and to request additional assistance from federal agencies where state capability is not adequate. Section 3. This resolution shall be effective immediately upon adoption. Okay. At this time, I would like to invite public comment on this resolution. Ella, I see your hand up. Go ahead.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, sorry, I wasn't sure how it works. So I just like to address the former councilor Susan Warmer comment. I don't know if Susan is still there. Just want to let you know that Bite Networking already requested the time at the next city meeting.
Sorry, Ella, I need to interrupt you. I'm sorry, is this about the resolution that's being read into the record?
Resolution. No, Susan Warner was just commenting about the...
Okay, so, point of order. We'll have public comment in just a few moments. but the comment now needs to be strictly about this resolution on the screen.
Okay, I'm sorry then. Okay, I'll wait for my time then.
Okay, thank you, sorry.
Okay, yeah, sorry about.
Okay, is there any public comment on this resolution? Okay, seeing none, is there any council debate on this motion? Okay, it looks like we are ready for the question.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Lewis?
Yes.
Councilmember Buckeye?
Yes.
Vice Mayor Vander Zanden?
Yes.
Yes.
Councilmember Clark?
Yes.
Councilmember Owens?
Yes.
And Mayor Cantamore?
Yes. Yes.
The motion passes 7-0.
Okay. On to item 12, as I don't believe that there are any city council reports. So item 12 is city council questions and comments. So are there any other council questions or comments that were not on the go ahead, Councilmember Lewis.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to give a quick update to the community who may not have been tuning in last Thursday at our work session that we are working on some outreach avenues, one of which is a Facebook site, a city Facebook site, and we have money in the budget to hire a archiver, which is the first step. And so hopefully we can get that going pretty soon. And then more recently, there's been talk of a newsletter, perhaps, to especially for people that aren't on Facebook, to get the latest happenings and make sure people know when we're discussing different things at different meetings, and so that they can attend and just generally know what's going on with the city government. If anyone has any other ideas, please let me know. You can contact me directly or through the city clerk. But we'll just keep the ball rolling on that and hopefully increase our communication back and forth. Thank you.
Are there any other council comments or questions, non-agenda? Okay, seeing none, I will open it back up to public comment on non-agenda items. So Ella, I'll go ahead and unmute you and you can speak.
Okay, hi. Sorry about this. I guess I wasn't paying attention. So I'd like to address again the former Councilor Susan Wormack comment. And just let everybody know that Byte Networking already requested the time at the next city meeting to discuss the broadband and the plans, and that we will distribute the PowerPoint presentation and we'll be happy to answer any public questions. One thing that we will be addressing, it will be the middle mile to satisfy immediate as well as the future delivery that Council was asking about. And as long, you know, we would like to dream big, but While we're dreaming, we also have to make sure that we continue to improve and serve at the same time, and giving the best possible options available right now. And that's, I guess that's all, except I would like to also thank you, the whole community, for overwhelming support that we got so far. We got tons of letters, and the whole response was very fantastic. We are pleasantly surprised. Thank you, everyone. That's all I have. I know it's late, so.
Thank you, Ella. Whitney, go ahead.
Hi, this is Whitney Rapp. I'm actually kind of representing Lori Trummer, who got off the phone, and she was the phone number earlier that couldn't speak. Her question, and I guess my question, is with the electric rates, a reduction in COPA will benefit our effective rate, but why is our rate not changing? And I think the council and city needs to do due diligence to protect the viability of our community with electric rates. Thank you.
Thank you, Whitney, and thank you for addressing Lori's question too. Is there any, are there any council questions for Whitney or for Ella? Okay, any other public comment on non-agenda items? Okay, seeing none, I will go ahead and thank all of you for joining us tonight. And I'd like to remind the members of the public that I have mayor's office meet and greet hours every Wednesday from 3:30 to 5. And if you'd like to make an appointment, you can email Karen or myself. And I plan on being here every Wednesday. So look forward to chatting, and thanks for hanging in there. I'm going to go ahead and adjourn the meeting, and the time is 9:26 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.